Good morning, everyone. Of course, happy Father's Day to our fathers out there. All right. So, you know, Mother's Day, we gave out roses. Father's Day, you know. All right, let's move on. That's fitting. Okay. We're not going to do a Father's Day sermon, but it sounds kind of like we need one, so... We are in Ephesians chapter 4. We're continuing our sermon series through Ephesians. I want to thank Jerry Reeves, who covered for me last week. I am doing much better today than I was a week ago today. I was definitely down and out, but doing much better. So thanks for your prayers and for those who've asked me about that. It's good to be back here again today with you. I know some of you might be wondering, as I was wondering not that long ago, what is a diadem? And if you don't know, it is a crown, a royal diadem, a crown. So if you didn't know what that was, now you can sing it and know what that means. At first, I thought it was a math terminology or something. Did I learn that in algebra? But no, it means a crown. So I'm not landing anything this morning, apparently. Nothing. All right. Go ahead and laugh at me. That's fine. I'll take any type of laughter. So we are in Ephesians chapter 4, and we will pick up here in verse 1. As a prisoner for the Lord, Paul says, as actually a real prisoner in jail, right? A prisoner for the Lord, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. I'm urging you to live a life worthy of the calling that you have received. We use that word sometimes to mean different things, right? What is my calling? What am I called to do? You know, as if there's some type of task or job out there for me that I must complete. And we want to discover that, especially as, you know, when we're younger and we think about that, what the future holds for us. What is, there's something out there for us that we want to fulfill our destiny. And when Paul says that, he's not talking about any of that. He's talking about what he's already written them about in chapters 1 through 3. And so chapter 4, we get into, okay, here's how we're going to live this out now. So we need to recap just a little bit to make sure we're all on the same page. What calling is Paul talking about? And if you go back through and you read chapters 1 through 3, which some of y'all may do that as I preach. But if you go back and you do that, you're going to read about how Jesus died and how he was raised from the dead. And not only raised from the dead, but he was raised over all of creation. That he is the ruler. He is now has all authority over all creation. And for those of us that believe and follow him, we too have been raised with Christ. Right? We are no longer what we once were, but we have died to ourselves and we have been raised with Christ. And so Jesus died to become ruler over all creation, to bring everyone together in unity under him, that there's no longer any differences among us, that you belong to that country and I belong to this country, or you are that race and I am this race. But now we are all one under the banner and the kingship and authority of Jesus Christ. And that together, we as followers of Jesus become the dwelling place, no matter our background or where we came from, but that God now dwells through his Spirit in us, the church. And the reason for that being to make known who God is, to make known who Jesus is and their wisdom to not only the world around us, but to all rulers and authorities in all of creation, that God has brought his people together under the rulership of Jesus to show the world his power and his love and his majesty. And that is our purpose now. That is the calling that we have been called to, right? That is what we're set out to live up to. That is a very big calling, right? That is a huge calling. And Paul's going to tell us then, all right, you need to live a life worthy of that calling. That's easy, right? You've been called to show not only the world, not only every other person out there, but all of creation who God is. So live a life worthy of that. Now, if he ended it like that, we'd all be sitting here, you know, that's impossible. There's no way that I could do that. How could I even step into those shoes? Right? And some of us, we think that this is far beyond than what we could ever accomplish. To live the life Jesus actually wants me to live is impossible. So I'm just going to do the best I can, which is maybe not much at all. right? That's what, unfortunately, where a lot of Christians get stuck. And so the title of this sermon is Grow Into. Grow Into. We need to grow into the calling that God has given us. Paul says, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble. You've been called to show the world the love and the power and the majesty of Jesus Christ. I can't imagine a bigger calling than that. If I were, called to some major, if I was a senator of the United States, right, or an ambassador to another country, or had some other major task or role given to me, it would be hard to remain humble in that position. The best leaders do, though, don't they? They remain humble. We've been called to something much greater than that. We are ambassadors for Jesus Christ to the world. And the first thing that Paul's going to tell us is, so stay humble. Stay humble, because it's not going to work if you don't stay humble. But not only humble just in who you are, but in your relationships with other people. Be gentle with how you deal with people. Christians have, in our past, in our history, we have a little bit of not being so gentle with those that don't agree with us. And we've learned, I hope, continue to learn, that that's not always the best approach. Right? We need to be gentle as we go forward and as we represent Christ in the way that he was gentle. Paul says, be patient and bear with one another in love. Recognize that none of you are where you need to be yet. In the same way that I see this great task that says, be worthy of the calling which God has given you. And I think, man, I'm not there yet. Well, yeah. Well, neither is anyone else. So be patient with one another and bear with one another as we together grow to the calling, into the calling in which has been given us. And a reminder that when you read through the book of Ephesians in this, you see the word you, Y-O-U, that it is a plural you. It is not a singular. We are called to do this together. We are called to grow into the calling that we have. Because the only way to really showcase who God is and show the world who he is through the church loving each other and loving others. And that's what we've been called to. So we need to bear with one another. We need to be able to forgive. We need to be able to give the benefit of the doubt. We need to work alongside with those, even with those we don't always agree with, even with those that get under our skin sometimes. Because, verse 3, we need to make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit. The unity of the Spirit. I have three brothers. I'm one of four boys. I have three brothers. And you can believe it that growing up, we fought a lot. Right? We fought a lot over dumb things, over, you know, whatever it was. Very often. Right? But at the end of the day, there was never a question that a fight was going to end with us no longer being brothers. Right? Even I know sometimes that happens with family, right? But even with my brothers and I, no matter what our disagreements and arguments and differences and whatever it may be, from being children to even into adulthood, there was always the sense that we were still brothers and still connected. We had the same blood in our veins. We as Christians have something much stronger than blood, the Spirit of God dwelling in us. And we may not always see eye to eye. We may not always agree with each other. But we need to understand that the same Spirit that is in me is the same Spirit that is in you. And as soon, if I want to break that relationship, if I don't want to have something to do with you, then I'm not operating no longer in the same Spirit that you are. And someone's off. And it's, the tendency is to say, yeah, well, you are. Right? But Paul's telling him there, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit, because as he's going to go on to say, as Jim read for us, there's one Spirit. You don't get a different Spirit of God, and I get a different Spirit of God. There's unity within God's Spirit, and I need to make every effort to keep that. Through the bond of peace, there's one body, one Spirit. Just as you were called to one hope when you were called, there's one Lord, there's one faith, there's one baptism, there's one God and Father of all who's over all and through all and in all. We're all a part of this one. We don't get to have differences. If I'm breaking myself off from other Christians, Not for, you know, things like if, you know, someone doesn't believe in Jesus, but when I start to break myself away from other Christians and separate myself, I'm not recognizing the oneness of God and who He is. And I need to do what I can do to make sure that I'm keeping that unity. Why? Because it is the church that shows the world who God is. And God is not broken, and God is not disunified. He is one. And when I no longer am one, then I'm not showing the world really a clear picture of who God is. And so I must strive to maintain that as much as I can. And not just me, again, all of us. This should be our effort, and not just this congregation here at West U, but all those who claim Jesus Christ as Lord. This should be the effort we strive for daily. Has it been historically in the church? Not very often, has it? We look out and we see something much different. We see division. We see brothers and sisters, at least they should be, who don't call themselves brothers and sisters, who don't get along, who talk down about, who criticize. And we look out and we see that who God is not fully being proclaimed to the world. We're not living into what God has called us. Verse 7, Paul goes on to say, to each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. As Christ apportioned it. We're not all the exact same. We need to recognize that. We don't all have the same talents. We don't all have the same abilities. We don't have the same IQ. We don't have the same income. We don't have the same looks. There's a lot of differences about us. And I should never look at you and be envious of what you have and what God's given you. And you should never look at me and think, boy, did I dodge a bullet there. I know some of you have thought that, right? Or I should not look at myself and think, man, I'm glad I'm not where that guy is, right? We should not have that mindset with the abilities that God's given us or anything. Instead, being honored and grateful for what God has given us to use for His glory, no matter what it is, right? We read in 1 Corinthians about some had different abilities to heal, and some could prophesy, and you know, some had different abilities in leadership, and they were holding it above one another. And they were saying, my gift is more important than your gift. And Paul says, no, you all need to work because you are one body. And that's the same idea here. Each one of us, grace has been given as Christ apportioned it. That is why it says when he ascended on high, he led captives in his train and gave gifts to men. The idea being that Jesus has won the victory. Jesus has overcome death, and he comes back and he showcases that. It's like a king coming back from a war, from a battle he has won, and he comes back into the city, and the spoils of war he's throwing out to the people of the city. And that's the picture that is given to us of Jesus, that he has won. He has all rule and power and authority, and he's coming back to, or he has come and given us gifts to be able to use to showcase his rule and his authority. Skip with me down to verse 11. It was he who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, some to be pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service so that the body of Christ, may be built up until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. It's a big sentence there. It's easy to look at that sentence and say, okay, some people are apostles, some people are prophets, some people are evangelists, some are pastors, some are teachers. And I look at it and say, well, some of us aren't any of those things, right? But don't skip the very first part of 11. It was he, Jesus Christ. Remember, he's won the battle, he's won the war, he's coming to his people, and he's giving out gifts for his people to bless them, right? To give them things that they need, to honor, I'm looking for a word I can't find, enrich, to enrich them. Thank you. You didn't say it, but thank you. I thought of you and I thought enrich, that's why it helped. To enrich them, right? Jesus is giving these gifts so that they can be built up, right? So that the showcase who he is, right? He gave these, he gave some to be apostles. Wait, what did he give out? He gave some to be apostles. He gave some to be evangelists. You could look at this, and it seems as if the gifts to his people were these what we call positions of leadership, evangelists, prophets, teachers, right, pastors, that these are gifts to God's people so that they can be built up in unity to attain the measure of the fullness of Christ. You want to talk about flipping something on its head. The leader, as we would like to put it, the person we expect to drive the church or lead the church, the person who, you know, maybe he's got his own parking spot, right? The person that we're going to listen to that oftentimes has the last word or a group of leaders, right? An eldership or teachers, those who kind of get to be the ones who make the decisions and who we look at as, you know, they're up here and we're down here. Paul is saying those folks have been given to God's people as a gift to help them grow to become more like him. There's an amazing verse in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 14, where the author of Hebrews says, angels are ministering spirits sent to serve the people that are inheriting eternal life. Angels. That if an angel appeared in this room in the form that we see in the Bible, most of us would probably drop down, scared to death. Angels are ministering spirits sent to serve God's people. That is an amazing concept, isn't it? The temptation for those who see angels are to worship them because, I mean, look at it. Well, I mean, not look at it, it's not here, but if you could see it, right? But the angels say, no, I'm not to be worshiped. In the same way, those that are sent to lead churches, to encourage, to inspire, to preach, to teach, to evangelize, are to serve the congregation, to help the church become more like Jesus. That is my role as a minister. That is the role of the elders. That is the role of those that teach little children. Right? This is the role of those who are in those positions to help bring the church to unity, to attain the full measure of Jesus Christ so that we can show the world and all rulers and powers and authorities in the world how awesome God is and how wise he is and how amazing his plan is. The position of a leadership in the church is not one that looks down upon the church. It's not one that has authority in the same sense that we normally think. It's not the boss. It's not the CEO. It is one who is a gift to God's people to help the church become what it needs to become. And Paul is saying one as this that we look at, and you know, historically, we have universities and we have cities and we have churches and we have streets named after this person, and you can see statues of him, and we look at this and we say, I want to be like Paul. And Paul is sitting in prison as he writes this, fully understanding the role that God has called him to suffer and to struggle and to give up of himself and his freedom so that God's church can be lifted up, so that God can be lifted up to show the world who he is. Paul understood that. Sometimes we lose that along the way, and I want to make sure we don't, because that is the role of apostles and prophets and evangelists and pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service. We sometimes get in, churches might pay people to do the works of service. I'm going to give you a title and a paycheck so that you can do what Christians are supposed to do. And that's not how it's set up in the church. That's not how it's set up in the Bible. It's so that the church can do the works that God has prepared us to do so that his body can be built up. Because the goal is unity. And again, it doesn't happen overnight. It's something that we are growing into. But not only unity, knowledge of the Son of God and becoming mature, growing up, attaining the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. If I asked each one of you individually and say, do you think all of Christ, the fullness of Christ, is dwelling in you? Or, the way Paul words it, y'all, is the fullness of Christ dwelling in this church now? The answer probably is going to be no, not completely. Right? because it's something we're striving for. The problem will become when we stop striving for that, when we stop growing. It's something we must always be trying to obtain. The fullness of the measure of the fullness of Christ. Verse 14, he says, then we're not going to be infants anymore. We're not going to be tossed back and forth by the waves, blown here and there by every wind of teaching and the cunning and craftiness of men and their deceitful scheming. We won't fall to that stuff anymore. And I know sometimes we read this and we think of maybe those who've come in after Paul and say, well, you know, that's fine. You want to follow Jesus, but also you have to follow these things. Or maybe someone coming in with the kind of a weird teaching that someone might fall for. And I think that talks about that, that covers that. But I think it's just more than this. I think there are many Christians today who have fallen for craftiness and deceitful scheming by men. We want to follow Jesus, but we look back at the last few weeks or hours or years in our life and we say, man, I sure didn't look like Jesus in a lot of this. And my goals were not the same goals that Paul's talking about here. And what I've been striving for and trying to build isn't actually unity within the body or the growth of the church, but my own kingdom and my own power. And we can fall prey to the craftiness and the teaching of men because we're not being built and we're not striving to obtain the measure of fullness in Christ in our lives. Verse 15, he says, instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head. Grow up into him who is the head. That is Christ. My oldest son, Vince, when he was born, I had a friend that made a joke that he said he kind of looks like a grapefruit on a pencil. That was his, the analogy he gave of Vince as a baby. His head's just so big, right? And as a children, that's oftentimes kind of cute. It's why they make bobbleheads and stuff like that. Because a big head and a little body, like, or grapefruit on a pencil or whatever. But an adult with a baby's head, that's kind of strange, right? You don't see that too much. Because we understand it, right? Because like my son, he's almost there. He's almost growing into that head, right? He's going to grow into that head. He's not always going to look like a grapefruit on a pencil or a bobblehead doll, right? He's going to grow into it. Jesus is the head. And we're going to grow in to look and fit and match him. That's the goal. If after so long we still look like a bobblehead, we're not doing our part, right? We're not growing in to look like the head of the body. That's not good. There's a problem there. We should look like Jesus. We grow into him who is the head, that is Christ. And from him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love. And each part does its work. And this is us. This is the body. All different types, all different parts. And I love Paul's, ligaments, supporting ligaments. You never think about a ligament until it doesn't work. And all of a sudden, it don't matter how much muscle you have or how strong your bones are, you have this ligament, it doesn't work, that part of the body's not able to do what it needs to do, right? You go to the gym, some people go to the gym and they work out and they work on those muscles and right, and you want to showcase those and they get all the glory and the biceps and the chest and all this stuff. Yeah, nobody's showcasing their ligaments. But without them, the muscles don't work, do they? This is the body. It doesn't matter what you've been apportioned, what God's given you. Are you working and doing your part to look like the head, to support the head, to follow the head? That's the goal. So church, I want you to look at yourself in relation to the body of Jesus Christ. I want you to look at the head and realize that's the goal. That's the goal. Not to be just to be a better Christian. Not to just be, more like maybe someone I see in the congregation who I admire and look up to. Not to look like, to be like Paul and say, okay, well, I need to be more. It's to look at Jesus Christ. Do you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John daily? And look how Jesus interacted. And look how he loved. And look how he sacrificed and say, that's what I'm growing into. That's the one I need to be like. That's the head. And you are a part of a body. And that it's important that you are joined in with other Christians. Sometimes we are the ligaments. And there are folks around me that need to be supported and need to be pulled and need to be pushed and need to be encouraged and need to be visited. And am I doing that? Am I looking at those who've gone astray, who aren't following Jesus, who are doubting, who are lost? And am I reaching out to bring them back in the same way I would tend a part of my body that was aching? And am I looking beyond that? Because I want this body to grow. Right? I want it to mature. I want others to be joined in. And I follow Jesus' example as I live this way. And at some point along the way, there are those who helped me become like Jesus, that helped me mature, that helped me grow into the calling that God has called me to. And I turn around, all of a sudden, I'm doing the same for others. I am becoming a minister to others as well, that I am now serving, and that God has made me a gift to other people so that they can grow into this body as well. That's a beautiful place to be, because I'm sure many of us can look at people in our lives who helped us in our faith, people that we wanted to be like, people that taught us the scriptures, people that encouraged us, people that had talks with us when we were in difficult places. But can we also look behind us and see others that we are doing the same thing too? That we are being that minister to those, whether they're younger or older, it doesn't matter. But that we are reaching out in the way that people have reached out to us. Jesus obeyed his Father. We are called to obey Christ. And when we do that, we start to be a part of this amazing, beautiful body that God dwells in through his Spirit that shows the world who he is. It doesn't happen any other way, church. Live up to the calling you have received. If there's anything you need from this congregation, if you need prayers, if you need encouragement, if you want to place membership with us here at WestU, if you want to be baptized, we extend this invitation to you now as we stand and sing.